I would like to talk about this very, very interesting formulation, the name of this portion, this reading portion, Lech Lecha. It's a Hebrew phrase, and I think we can translate it roughly, go for yourself. And so in that regard, I would like to just say something about this, because it is not the only way that people would translate a phrase like Lech Lecha. So I've actually highlighted three different ways of understanding it. The first one is go yourself, not go for yourself, but go yourself. Now, I don't know much about other languages, but if you are talking to someone and you tell the person go, it's not necessary to use the word yourself. But you, because I cannot tell the Zev go, and my intention is not for her to go, but for her friend to go. You understand what I'm saying? So it's, even to say just go yourself, is, it sounds like a little bit of the second part is unnecessary. You can just say go. And I would like to show that it is not the typical Hebrew way of telling someone to go. Because if you, I have five other verses here, and I would like to read them briefly. Just the short part of the verse, or the short, let's say the summary of the verse. Genesis chapter 27 and verse 9, it says, go to the flock. And then the word is used, the word lech. Is used, not Lech Lecha, just the word Lech. Go to the flock. Genesis 28 and verse 2, it says there, go to Padan Aram, it's a place, only the word Lech, not Lecha. Exodus chapter 7 and verse 15, go to Pharaoh in the morning. Moshe had to go to Pharaoh, just the word Lech, go. It's like a command. And Exodus chapter 19 and verse 10, go to the people and set them apart. Only the word Lech, not Lech Lecha. 1 Kings 2 and verse 26, go to Anatot, to your own fields. Only the word Lech, not Lech Lecha. So the point that I want to make is there's something in this command where Yahweh spoke to Avram before his name was changed, and he said to him, Lech Lecha. It's not, in my mind, it's not only telling him to go, it's telling him a little bit more. Go for yourself. So the second option where some people say you should translate this as go to yourself. Now that's also a little bit nonsensical in any language, to tell someone to go to yourself. But these people are talking the kind of language that one hears quite often nowadays, is where people would say you have to find yourself. You have to find your innermost being. You have to find the possibilities locked up within yourself. Go to yourself. It's quite possible to translate that phrase in that way, because the L before Lech Lecha means actually two. But I don't think this is what Yahweh wanted to tell Avram. You can also translate Lech Lecha, go for yourself, for the sake of yourself. Go for yourself. And that is the third possibility. And I think this is the correct way to understand it. So I just wanted to give that introduction. And then if you read that verse, you can see the verse on the right-hand side, Genesis 12 and verse 1, it says, and Yahweh said to Avram, go for yourself out of your land, from your birthplace, and from your father's house, to a land which I will show you. Three forms of leave that Avram had to fulfill. He had to leave his land, Eretz. And it's interesting to look at the meaning, the original meaning of the word Eretz. It means to be firm. Land means to be firm. You can see the picture behind that. If you're standing on a piece of land, it will be firm beneath your feet. That is the basic meaning of the word Eretz. So I would say what Yahweh is telling him, if you want to go according to the meaning of the word, you need to be willing to leave the things that make you feel strong. The firmness makes you feel strong. So you need to be willing to leave those things. That is included in the word Eretz. Then he said, leave your birthplace. The word there is Moledet. And it comes from the word to be born. So here, Yahweh is telling him, you need to be willing to leave the actions that make you feel alive. When you are born, you're alive. So Yahweh is telling him, you must be willing to leave the things that makes you feel strong. You need to leave the actions that make you feel alive. And the third one is, you also need to leave your father's house. And the word Bayit comes from the concept of building. And so it also includes, you need to leave, you need to be willing to leave the people who make you feel safe. So the things that make you feel strong, the actions that make you feel alive, and the people who make you feel safe. This is included, in my view, perhaps not in a direct way, but still, if you go according to the meaning of those words, you can read that into that verse 12 and verse 1. Then the third aspect is what it means that Avram is called the Hebrew. So we read in Genesis chapter 14 and verse 13, and they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and left. And one who had escaped came and informed Avram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre in Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner. And they had a covenant with Avram. The interesting thing here is that Avram is called here Avram the Hebrew. Avram the Hebrew is the only place in all of scriptures where Avram is called Avram the Hebrew. So the question is, what is there something behind that? And I believe there is. The Hebrew phrase is Avram ha-Ivri. Avram ha-Ivri. That is translated as Avram the Hebrew. But the thing is that this is also referring to an ancestor of Avram. We mentioned the name of that ancestor the previous time, I believe. Eber or Ever. Ivrim comes from that word Ever. It is the same kind of spelling, it's the same meaning. It comes from a verb that means to cross over. Avar means to cross over. So Avram, the Hebrew, is also Avram, the descendant of Ever, but it is also Avram, the one who crossed over. Avram, the one who crossed over. There's something personal to us in this name Ever, because we realize after we've had our first child, we gave her the name of Yubrei, that there's something of these letters in the name of Yubrei, because Ever has become Hebrew over time. So the H was added to the two letters B and R. H, B, R, and you have those three consonants in the name of Yubrei. We didn't know it when we gave her that name, but we realized afterwards that we've actually given a name to our firstborn, to Yubrei, that was quite in line with the name of Avram and Ever, who was connected with the idea of crossing over. Maybe that was also part of the Father's plan with our own lives to teach us something about the deeper meaning of crossing over. And we are very grateful for that. There's also a word play in a wordplay between the names Avram and Eber. If you have to take the verb, every Hebrew word comes from a verb, so a do word. So if you take the verb from the name of Avram, it would be this top one, Avar. If you take the verb from the name Eber, it would be this bottom one, Eber. Avram means something quite different from Eber. Avram is, who of you can tell me what the meaning of the name Avram is? Father of what? Father of many nations, a multitude of nations, but that was after his name change. Before the name change, we are now in Genesis chapter 12, it's before the name change, before he got an extra H or a hey in the name. The name was Father, who is exalted. The last part of the name is actually Ram or Rum. Exalted Father, elevated Father. So this is basically the idea behind Avar. And this one, what is the basic idea behind this name? To cross over. But you can see the name play, actually, even in the letters. If you take this first letter of the name, the verb that is associated with Avram, and you swap it around like that, you turn it on this axle around, it will look like that. And if you take that letter and bring it down, you just take that little leg away, that part, cut it off there, and that's the letter of the first letter of the name of Ava. So although the two names mean something different in normal Hebrew, they are related in a sense. And it's very interesting to me that in this reading portion of today, that Avram is called Avram the Hebrew. The only place that we have in all of scriptures. Then also an interesting thing, if you talk about Shem, if you take the name Shem and you take the name Eber or Eber, this bottom one here is now away, then you have what they call in English, and I've learned about this word just this week. I haven't known this word before, but it is a word in English. Eponymous. That word means you have a name and a group of people is named after that. You've got a person and he's got a name, and then a group of people is named after that person. It's like the Mennonites. We spoke about the Mennonites yesterday. They were named after a person with the name of Menon or Menon. And here we have the name Shem. And today we talk about the Semites, or the Semites, the Semites, were named after the person Shem. And you have the person Eber or Eber, and the Hebrews are named after this. So we have in the early history of the people of Israel and the people of the Hebrews, you have these two names that's stuck. Those two names we still hear today when we refer to the people that we are talking about today. And out of these two names, we can also see two quite outstanding characteristics of the Ivrim or the Hebrews. And this is these two. The first one is following the one with a name above all names. They are the people who are following the one with a name above all names. They are followers of Yahweh, and they are also calling upon his name. So beautiful, and you don't get to see that in all the older translations, that Avram called upon the name of Yahweh at least three times that we read of specifically. You don't see that if the name of Yahweh is not in the text there. And I just wanted to add here, perhaps not everyone knows this, but the name Yahweh, the original name Yahweh, appears between 6,800 and 7,000 times in the Old Testament, in the pre-Messianic scriptures alone. and it is omitted from the majority of the Bibles that are available today. So two very, very outstanding characteristics of the Hebrews. The first one is they are following the one with the name above all names and calling upon that name. Those days, not today, they are avoiding the name nowadays, but in those days they called upon the name. The second one is they are showing a willingness to cross over for themselves. Lech lecha. Cross over for themselves, but in the end, not only for themselves, but also for those following them, those around them, those who are connected to them, those who are associated with them. So those two characteristics, I feel, is something that we need to take notice of and something that we need to incorporate into our own lives as well. I just want to give you a few examples of the use of the word Hebrew, which is all of these are pointing towards the same thing that we pointed out just now with the name of Ever, someone who crossed over, someone who is not part of the mainstream, someone who is standing out like a sore thumb, one can almost say. Let me just give you a few examples there. Potiphar's wife refers to Joseph, as a Hebrew because he was an outsider to the household of Potiphar. He was an outsider. He was standing out. And therefore, she called him Joseph the Hebrew in Genesis 39 and verse 14. Then Pharaoh's daughter refers to the people of Israel as Hebrews because they had a different identity to Egypt. They were different from the Egyptians or the Egyptian people who were around her from day to day. Therefore, the people were called Hebrews specifically. Then the Philistines, a little bit later in history, the Philistines referred to the Israelites as Hebrews. Remember the time of Goliath, when the people of Israel set up their camp next to the camp of the Philistines. There they referred to the Israelites as Hebrews because they were foreigners to the territory of the Philistines. Read about that in 1 Samuel 4 and verse 6. And then, to me, this was quite interesting. In the New Testament book that is called the book of Hebrews, the word that we are talking about right now, the word Hebrew. Now, in this book, in chapter 11, we have that list of well-known patriarchs who set an example for us in the way they believed, an example that we can truly also follow. And here the writer of the book describes Avram and those who join Avram in his pattern of belief as strangers and pilgrims here on earth. That's in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8 to 16. So we can see a clear pattern here in the use of the word Hebrew or Hebrews. Interesting fact is that in the LXX or the Septuagint, that is the Greek translation of the Old Testament or the Tanakh, this phrase that we've talked about, the words from Genesis chapter 14 and verse 13, the translation in the LXX is Avram the Perates. Remember, this is Greek now. Avram the Perates. Sounds a little bit like pirate. And the meaning is almost the same, because the meaning of the Greek word perates is the one who stepped over. Sounds like the one who crossed over. Think of a pirate. He would take his little boat and he would park his boat right to another boat, perhaps a bigger boat, and then he would step over. Sounds a little bit like that. It's interesting that in the LXX, it doesn't say Avram the Hebrew. It says Avram the Perates. Avram, the one who stepped over. Avram, the one who was moving from here to a place beyond. That's basically the meaning in the LXX as well. And what is also interesting is that in the time of the birth of Peleg, or Peleg, Eber's son, this patriarch, whose name means to cross over. So when his son was born, we read in Genesis chapter 10 and verse 25 that the earth was divided by that time. Now, what do you think is the reason for this remark? If it says the earth was divided, what are you thinking of when you hear that? Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel. There was when the division began. It was orchestrated by Yahweh himself because of what the people had done or tried to do. There was division that came upon the earth. But then in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 1, we hear that before the Tower of Babel, there was one language and one speech. Genesis chapter 11 and verse 1. And what do you think that language was? We can be pretty sure it was Hebrew. Because all the names that we have in those days were Hebrew names with Hebrew meanings. It was in the time when the people were judged according to their relationship with Yahweh, the Elohim of the Hebrews. This is how it was before the episode of the Tower of Babel. But then it says that Peleg was born in a time when the earth was divided. We know that the Hebrew language was not affected by the confusion that came with the Tower of Babel. So it's actually telling us that Eber, whose name means the one who crossed over, that he remained faithful. He was not part of that circus surrounding the Tower of Babel. We can almost be sure about that. We can assume that Eber must have lived in those times and that he remained faithful to Yahweh. He did not partake in what was happening there around the Tower of Babel. We can almost say that quite possibly he even distanced himself from that whole affair completely, because the Hebrew language was not affected by the language confusion that came upon the rest of the world, and especially upon those who openly rebelled against Yahweh and deceived themselves into believing that they could elevate themselves to the level of the Almighty himself. That was what they tried to achieve, and Yahweh wanted to show them once and for all that he is Yahweh, he's not a man, and it is not man's place to try to elevate himself to the level of the Almighty. So Avram, later being called Avram HaIvri or Avram the Hebrew, also translatable as Avram of Eber, confirms that Avram continued the legacy of Eber of consistently choosing to cross over from worldly attitudes, choosing to live a set-apart life. So Avram was acting in the tradition of his great-great forefather Eber. That's the third one, and then we come to the fourth point, and that is to try to bring this all out, how it plays out into the time when Yeshua came and the things that Yeshua did. The kind of crossing, I think it's important for us to see this, the kind of crossing over that is highlighted in scriptures always comes down to a crossing over or a deliberate movement from darkness to light. This is the idea behind Eber. It's not a crossing over from light to darkness. It's a crossing over from darkness to light. It's a crossing over from confusion to truth. It's a crossing over from sinful mindset to clarity and becoming in line with the things that Yahweh wants us to do. When we say that we are followers of Yeshua, we are also followers of Yeshua in the aspect of crossing over. I think Yeshua came to set an example in this regard. Just like to once again give a few examples of how we can see that Yeshua actually showed us and illustrated and demonstrated in many ways how we should be willing and prepared to do what Avram did right at the beginning when he was still living in Haran. And Yahweh came to him and he said to him, Lech Lecha, leaving all of this behind. Also the traditions and the ways that he became used to in Haran, go to an unknown place. It must have been difficult for Avram. Must have been a very, very a hard thing to do. And still we get the impression that Avram just moved upon the word of Yahweh, as he did with his son Isaac when he got that very, very difficult commandment from Yahweh to take his son and to set him up as an offering. We are followers of Yeshua, and we are followers of Yeshua also in this regard of crossing over from sinful desires to a consistent desire to please Yahweh and come closer to him. Sinful desires, this is where we've been before. I've said crossing over is crossing over from darkness to light. Sinful desires, crossing over from there to a consistent desire to please Yahweh and to come closer to him. And Yeshua said, he said, my food is to do the desire of him who sent me. My food is to do the desire of him who sent me. Crossing over from holding onto the traditions of men, whereby in Yeshua's own words, people who are holding on to traditions of men are nullifying the words of Yahweh. Isn't this true in our own day as well? Sometimes people are so attached to the traditions of men that they don't realize that in the process they are nullifying the very words of Yahweh. They are drawing a line through the words of Yahweh by their traditions. Crossing over from honoring theology and doctrine and religious jargon instead of honoring Yahweh. I'm thinking of Yeshua's constant clash with the Pharisees and the scribes and the religious people of his day. Those people were so focused upon religious correctness and the show on the outside and the outward form of so-called righteousness that Yeshua saw right through them, and he clashed with them many times because of that. And he said, for example, in Matthew chapter 5, where he spoke about the reason why he came, the reason why Yahweh has decided to send him. He said, it was not to destroy Torah, it was to fulfill Torah. And then he said, thanks Papa, I can see that you agree with what I'm saying. Then he said, if someone comes to you and tells you to leave out even the smallest part of Torah, that person will be called the least in the kingdom of Yahweh. And then directly after that, Yeshua said an amazing thing, and I think it must have struck at the heart of the religious people when he said to them, your righteousness should be more than the righteousness of the Pharisees and the scribes and the religious people. Meaning that their righteousness was an outward righteousness, and what Yahweh is looking for in all of us is an inward mindset of pleasing him and following his word. I want to say something about the letter of Shaul or Paul to the Philippians. In the town of Philippi, 30 years after Yeshua's ministry on earth, there was strife. We read about this in the letter of Philippians. There was strife and selfish ambition and loneliness in mind is one of the translations. We read about that in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 15 to 16, also 2 and verse 3. And Shaul is urging them to cross over, to move away from those earthly mindsets and from those earthly practices. He said to them they needed to cross over, and then he said to them specifically, let the same mind of humility and self-denial be in you, which was also in Yeshua the Messiah. I wanted to say a little bit more about Philippians 2, because that's a part of the New Testament that is often mistranslated and misunderstood. But I thought maybe today is not the day for that. But if you read the context of Philippians 2, you'll see it's about humility. And Yeshua, who set a wonderful example for us to follow. And sometimes we realize when we look at that, we can just see in our own lives that we are so far removed from that attitude. And that is where we need to follow the example of our Master Yeshua and be willing to cross over to that level that he demonstrated through his life. Then I was just sitting in the next point. By the way, that little mark on the left hand side with each new point, do you recognize that? It's a little circle with two Hebrew letters inside. It's
Chai.
Not Chai.
Not Chai.
Not Chai. Lamed. Lamed. Two little Lameds. It's the letters that is standing for Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha. That's where you came at the word Chai. But I've said there, up to this day, we can still look at Yeshua. Paul, Apostle Paul, was putting the example of Yeshua in front of this congregation in Philippi. And up to this day, we can still look at Yeshua. He who crossed over from the pattern of this world. Alles wat mooi is, Jo François, goed gaan hoor. Up to this day, we can still look at Yeshua. He who crossed over from the pattern of this world to an otherworldly pattern. The pattern that Yahweh is looking for among all of his followers. It is not only Avram and the Hebrews and the Philippians who needed to cross over. It is us too. We have the perfect example of Messiah. And above all, we have forgiveness in his name. So that if we find within ourselves a mindset that is focused on comfort and personal gain and not on loyalty to Yahweh, we should repent and once again step over to his side from wherever we are. Let us always cherish the fact that Yeshua is our passport for crossing from this world to the next. Crossing over is a well-known concept in traveling, in the traveling industry today. You need to cross over many times from one country to another country, especially on airports, and you need a passport for that. And Yeshua is our passport. And we can see that quite clearly in a verse like Luke chapter 18 and verse 29 to 30. The one who has left house or parents, Yeshua was saying this, or brothers or wife or children for the sake of the reign of Elohim or the kingdom of Elohim, shall receive many times more in the present time and in the age to come everlasting life. Now the one who is willing to cross over, one who is willing to give up the things that are nice and cozy and convenient and just follow Yahweh, just follow his word, get rid of the rebellious spirit, and be obedient to what he is saying, those ones will receive many times more in the present life and in the age to come everlasting life. The well-known John chapter 14 and verse 6, Yeshua said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. This is our passport. 1 Corinthians 15 verse 20-21 is such a wonderful passage, that whole passage of 1 Corinthians 15. It's all about Yeshua's resurrection. And it says there, Messiah has been raised from the dead and has become the first fruit of those having fallen asleep. What is the apostle saying here? the first fruit of those having fallen asleep. What does he mean?
He died.
In what sense is he the first fruit?
He was resurrected.
And he's the first one to be resurrected. Many will follow. And those many are us. We will follow. He's the first fruit. It's the guarantee of many more that will come. So he's the first fruit of those having fallen asleep. For since death is through a man, resurrection of the dead is also through a man. And this man is Yeshua, Messiah.